Good morning.
Welcome to the 31st World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm an addict. My name's Bill. I'm from Providence, Rhode Island. And I've asked Bill K. to read what... I'm sorry. Yes, we can. Thank you. We start this with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant us this serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And now I've asked Bill K. to come up and read.
Morning, family. I'm Bill from Fresno, California. Addict from Fresno. You know, you get nervous when you get up here. I don't know. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We're recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There's only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us, regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We're not interested in what or how much you use or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
And I'd like to ask Kathy C. to come up and read why we're here.
Hi, my name is Kathy. I'm an addict. I'm from Providence, Rhode Island.
Hi, Kathy.
Why are we here? Before coming to the Fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different. We thought we had found it in drugs. We placed our youth ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we are actually creating our own problems. We seem to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realize that in our addiction, we are slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced and continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease for which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
Okay, and at this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker from Louisiana, Dickie D.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict named Dickie. Could we have a moment of silence for the people who still suffer in and out of these rooms? Thank you. Changing the nature of our relationships I didn't understand what they wanted, and I'm not sure that I ever do when I get asked to do a particular topic-type workshop. What I try to do when I am in charge of a programming committee is I try to put the name of the workshop might not really appear to what we're asking for somebody to share on. But I believe that the topic title here was exactly what I need to share today. When I got clean, I did just what I did when I wasn't clean, when I was still using. I was the same person, except I didn't put a drug in my body any longer. I still acted the same. I still treated people the same. And I don't know how long that lasted, but it lasted for a long time. What I know is that my society and my living experience to that point had taught me certain aspects of life and actually ingrained in me some beliefs and preferences that I had to use, I had to draw from in order to be the person that I was. Those experiences that I drew from, today I don't like. And the reason I don't like them is because I've gotten new information. This program has offered me things that I've had all my life, but I never took them in to heart as I do today. My parents, when I was a child growing up, taught me some values and some ethics, most of which I use today and I embrace because I believe in those things. But as a child growing up, as a teenager growing up, as a young adult growing up, I wanted to do things my way. I wanted to be different. I wanted to be unique. I wanted to do it different from the way people wanted me to do it or the way that I'd been taught to do it. Therefore, I did those things that I wanted to do. And I struggled a lot of times with having any idea of who I was and really what I wanted. But I didn't know that till I got here. I remember calling a friend of mine up. We were going to a football game. And I said, "Hey, man, what are you wearing?" I didn't ask him what he was wearing so that I just know what he was wearing. I kind of wanted to wear either something just like him or something exactly opposite from him. That's a man's perspective. I remember asking people what they wanted, yet never opening my mouth. Having to believe what they wanted without asking them and then trying to be that person. And that was what the nature of me, the person you see in front of you, was at the time that I quit using. And for a period of time after I got clean, because when I got here, I didn't know any other way to do things. I didn't know how to do things differently. I didn't know how to even understand that I was doing things different from other people. When I shared in meetings, I'd listen as it went around the room. And when it got to me, I'd try to share something nobody else had shared. Or I'd try to share something that was a little better than or a little worse than something somebody else had shared. Because I had to be significant. I had to be somebody people listened to. And I know today that looking back over my younger life, I was that person. I wasn't fast. I wasn't strong. I wasn't tall. I wasn't real athletic. Yet I did try to do all those things. And the way I compensated from that was I talked louder and faster than most people. I tried to drown out the sounds of other people. I tried to make like my way was the way. I know when I graduated from high school, I was number 6 in my class. Pretty close to the top of 140 people. Yet, I wondered how everybody behind me got where they got. They went to the same classes. They took the same tests. They had the same information given to them. The same outside things that were involved were given to them. But how did they get it? I couldn't understand it because I thought I was the only one that would get it.
How could you possibly know that?
Well, I know when I got here, the day I walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I had all the answers. But nobody had any questions. I could tell you how to do it, but I didn't know what we were doing. I could guide you in the direction, but I didn't know where we're going to. That was who I was the day I got clean. I got clean not because I wanted to be here and be a speaker at the World Convention in Hawaii at a workshop about the changing nature of our That's the one. Thank y'all. Y'all have studied this thing. I'm glad. Relationships. That's not why I got clean. I got clean because I got fired from the only job I've had. I had a family that I was trying to support that I didn't have any money left to support. And I was just before being out on the streets. Now, I come from a middle-class family who worked hard all their lives, and my mother still works hard. At 10:30 at night, we're here on the lawnmower riding around spraying the fence rows so the weeds don't grow. Those kind of things are where I grew up from. Country. Simple. Not real fast lane. Not real complicated out here. But Lord, get in here. I talk every once in a while about this Star Trek movie that goes on in my brain. And how every time they show those flashing lights, those are thoughts in my brain. And how difficult it is to slow it down enough to where I can only have six or eight voices talking at a time. What I believe today is I had a lot of people tell me different things. I had authority tell me things. I had administrators tell me things. I had teachers tell me things. I had parents and family and people that I grew up with tell me certain things. And everything that I heard, whether it was positive or negative, I'll go both places. No matter what it was, everybody had a distinct different voice. And it was a distinct different sound and a different tone. Yet, when I got clean, they all sounded the same. And they all sounded like me. Because all of a sudden, I had become my own worst critic of me. And that hurt. Because I didn't have a clue until y'all told me that. I didn't have a clue I was my own worst critic. I didn't have a clue my life had come down to where I was the only victim in the world. And everybody else treated me bad. Yet when I get in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, you tell me I'm not a victim. And you tell me it was a problem with my disease, but my recovery is my responsibility. Therefore, I need to change me. Now, I went into a facility that was a for-profit facility for 28 days. The counselor there interviewed me and went on a 10-day vacation. So I had plenty of opportunity after I interviewed and gave them my information to help all the other people that were there. Again, that was the nature of who I was. I use a dictionary, and this is the first time in almost 18 years I've gone to the readings and wrote something down before I got up here. I went to the dictionary this morning. And I wrote down a couple of different definitions for change. The first one I wrote, which was not the first one in the dictionary, change, the process or condition of changing, alteration or modification. And on down a little bit, it had transformation, the replacing of one thing for another. It could be a person, it could be anything. I looked up the word nature. The aggregate, which is a collection of a person's instincts or preferences. Man's natural state as distinguished from state of grace. I thought that was real interesting. And then the last one I looked up was relationship. Now the relationship word had about a little small line and a half, and it talked about marriage or blood relations. That was specific to that. So I went back to the relation word, and it said logical or natural association between one or more things. People could be a thing. Condition of being related, blood or marriage. Now, I'm not sure how we're going to put all those together before this is all over with. I'm sure you'll understand, because I have no clue. And that's why I wrote things down, so I could get started. I've been watching the TV and here listening to the news. We made a decision on Friday to get out early because we were due to fly out of New Orleans, Louisiana, on Tuesday morning at 11:30. And Tuesday morning at 11:30, one of the levees broke in New Orleans and it flooded the city. We got out early, came here. We got an extra 3 days out of the trip, which is real fortunate for us. But as I'm watching what's happening back home, I'm looking at us, individually or collectively as a group. The people that I believe we talk about being. We talk about being animalistic. We talk about being survivors. And I'm watching that on TV. I'm watching people loot. I'm watching people fight. I'm watching people struggle. I'm watching people shoot guns. I'm watching people jump off of balconies, jump off an upper deck of the Superdome. When right before that, he was a happy-go-lucky person. And all of a sudden, he turned and jumped. You know, that's the nature of what we get to when the pressure's on. Now, I don't know that there was any pressure in my first 35 years of my life, but that's where I got to. My thought process of riding down the interstate in my company truck was, man, I wonder what it'd be like running through that 18-wheeler going the other way. And then I think, man, that's suicide. Then I think, wonder what it would be like. I'm 2 years clean, 5 days short of, I'm sitting at my kitchen table, and I got a gun to my head. Because I don't like living the way I'm living, and I'm almost 2 years clean. So I know that my process of change might have started, but I haven't realized it and got involved yet. I'm not involved in the process of change other than going to meetings on a regular basis. One of our readings talks about regularly going to meetings. Regularly. Now, regularly is once a month for some people. Regularly is once a week for some people. Regularly for some people, when I got clean, was showing up for their anniversary date to get a coin, show up at the last minute of the meeting and leave before the prayer. That's regularly for some people. I know that for me, the longest time I've missed meetings in the almost 18 years I've been clean has been 11 days. And I got back to feeling like the gun to my head again. That's just the way I felt on the inside. What you people have done for me is you continue to tell me when I go to meetings that it'll be okay. Keep coming back. It'll be okay. Now, you didn't tell me what it was. You told me to stick with the winners, and you didn't tell me who they were. But what I know is I stuck with the people that showed up on a regular basis. I know today that that was my survival instinct. Hanging with the people that showed up on a regular basis. That was a change part for me, but it was actually the same stuff I was doing when I was using. Just in a more positive way for me, because I was getting some different information and didn't even realize it because I really wasn't listening. I didn't want to hear what you had to say. I just didn't want to hurt. I didn't want any new information. I just wanted to, you know, feel okay. And I know for me today that when I walked into a meeting, it was like a weight got lifted off my back. And when I walked out, it was like it was on there again. You told me when I walked into a meeting that life would get better, but first it would get different. I experienced that because it got a lot different for me. I was the kind of guy that my first sponsor told me to get one of those little address. When I got clean, all the conventions had little address books. He told me to get addresses, write phone numbers down, and bring them back. I did exactly what he told me. I went to my first convention, and I got names and phone numbers, and I brought them back. He said, well, let me see them. 10 women. One man, because one of the women were married, and she maybe put his phone number down. When I went to, that's my understanding, right? That's my understanding. That was the preferences that I had at the time. I went to my second convention. He didn't say anything with that one. I went to my second convention. And it just so happened that two of the women's numbers that I got were married. So I had 2 men and 8 women on the list. But you know, when I got back home, when I did with those, I put them in a drawer and never opened it again. Until I had the next list with the next book, and I put it in the same drawer and never opened it again. Because I didn't want to let myself open up enough to you to let you know who I really was, because as we say, you might not like me. You might not want to be around me. You might not want to have anything to do with me. So therefore, I stayed isolated in the inside. I stayed all balled up because I was real scared, just like I was when I was out there. I was real scared that I couldn't be a part of because of something I did. Y'all didn't think that. Y'all didn't say that. But I had it right here. The control box. We talk about working steps. We talk about steps 1, 2, and 3 being surrender steps. We talk about getting all the trash, getting it all together, putting it in a bag, and laying it out there. We talk about step 4 where we share with our sponsors. And 5 where we share with our sponsors and another individual and God. And we talk about, some people talk about, you know, maybe putting all this stuff in a balloon and letting it go off, or burning it, or just getting rid of it. Well, that doesn't get rid of it for me. Because I got 35 years stuck in here that all that new information, all it did was just pile on top of. And every time I went to thinking and think more than a couple of seconds, the new information went out the window and the old information started taking over again. That's who I was. That's who I was when I got here. That's who I was when I put the gun to my head. That's who I was at 2.5 years clean when my sponsor today, when I walked up to him and I said, I've been clean 2.5. I've been clean 2.5 years. Y'all talk about this God of your understanding. I got no idea. I got no clue. Where do I go? He told me to go talk to an individual that was his sponsor. I talked with him. And I ended up talking with 7 or 8 individuals that weekend at that spiritual retreat in Alabama. That I used the information given to me, and that was the first time I actually used it. I'm like maybe a lot of you, maybe not. I have people I like and I don't like. I have actions that I like and I don't like. So my preferences, my ethics, my values are different than other people's. And that's what I understand today to be okay. What I had to do was I had to go talk to a person I couldn't stand. And it wasn't because somebody asked me to go talk to him. It was because I got pushed and nobody was behind me. And I went and talked to this individual who was a Saturday night speaker there. And I talked to him for quite a long time. I talked to a woman with 1.5 years clean. I talked to people with more clean time, less clean time. A variation of people, different races, different sexual orientations, heights, weights. I talked to a lot of people because I had started doing my first research project in this program. I'd gotten deep enough into my surrender where I was asking for help. I had finally decided that maybe you could do for me what I could not do for myself. I didn't start working the steps that day. Nor the next, nor the next. I talked a lot about them. And I did exactly what the people that were clean around me did when they were involved. We talked about working the steps, but we didn't work them. We just talked about them. And the more we talked about them, the less we understood them. Because we talked about the same thing over and over again. I don't know why, but I'm the only person left clean going to meetings in the area where I go to meetings at on a regular basis. There are two other people that are clean, and they don't go to meetings and hadn't gone to meetings for about 10 years. But they're still clean. I'm the only one left going to meetings. I used to be the one with the most clean time, which is the scariest thing I ever got into. Because I didn't want to be an example for anything. I want an example to be out there to lead me. Yet there wasn't anybody there. I'd go into meetings and people would have collectively 6 months clean. And me. And I would think that they were asking me to give them the answers that I didn't have. And my fears just overwhelmed me all over again. But I didn't use and I continued to go to meetings. I continue to talk to people in this program that continue to come to this program. Because I did learn who the winners were and where they were going. And I had to go seek them out because they weren't always available to me. And I do that regularly today. Because I know who they are. And sometimes they fall. But I've got such a network of people today that when one falls, there's another one sitting there waiting on me. And there's new ones coming in all the time. That's my process of change. Now, I hope you weren't in here looking for that relationship in that topic line as being what we were going to talk about as an intimate relationship. Because although that's part of what I'm talking about, my relationships are with every person I have ever met. Every person that's ever come across my path has had a part in who I am today and who I was when I got clean and on through that. No matter who you are, no matter how you act, no matter where you come from, no matter where you're going, you are a part of who I am. When I go to meetings and I sit down there watching newcomers come in day after day after day, and very rarely do we watch them come back in. After they've not decided not to come to us again. I lose a little bit of me on the inside. And then I start talking to the people that stick around here, and I get a little bit of that back. The relationships that I have with people today are different than they were when I got here. Mainly because the stance I've taken has softened quite a bit. I don't have to be right about everything. I don't have to have the last say in everything. I do not have to be the only person that has the answers. I know when I go to meetings, some people will say, the longer I've been here, the less I know. I'm not sure what they mean. What I realize today is the longer I've been here, the less I understand and have experience with being clean in recovery as opposed to using and that experience. I'm getting pretty close to halfway point of the amount of time I used and the amount of time I've been clean. Kind of equal out, just getting pretty close to that. And I'm not sure, because of all the things I've heard, whether I got to start all over again when I get to that point, or what exactly, but I know that my relationships today involve talking with people I don't like and talking with them lovingly, having relations with people that I do like and treating them the same way, having relationships with the newcomers that walk in the door and treating them like they're the old timers that have been there for a long time, and treating everybody the same. I have a couple of friends in my life that have family members that have gone back out. come back in, gone back out, come back in. And the relationships that I have to use there are just about the same. I have to treat that person as an addict, and I have to treat that person as a loving human being also. I know when I got here, I had the first guy that ever asked me to sponsor him when I was almost 2 years clean go back out after about a year and a half. And he would call me and he would say, "I want what you have," and I'd hear him take a hit. "I want what you have," and I'd hear him take a hit. I got so frustrated and angry with him and the disease that I told him he couldn't be a part of my life anymore. Because I could not take that jab every time he said, "I want what you have," and then take a hit. And I went on with that for about 6 months when I finally, my sponsor said, "Okay, let's sit down and talk about this." We talk about having relations with people and being unconditional with the love that we share with them. And all of a sudden, you have cut somebody out of your life that used to be a part of your life. Standard answer, "Well, he's not in this fellowship anymore. He's out there using." And my sponsor said, "So what makes him any different than you when you got here and the way we treated you?" My first lesson in unconditional was probably the one that hurt the most. Because I didn't want to cut that man out of my life. But I didn't want to hurt anymore by having him use and me being a part of that. I thought I was a part of that. And what I began to understand was I'm not a part of that at all. I didn't have anything to do with him going to get loaded. I did the things that were necessary for me and him to stay clean a day at a time. And he made a choice. And that choice was to go back out and get loaded. I had nothing to do with that. So I actually thought that my values and my ethics had caused somebody to leave the rooms. Not saying that I hadn't done that. Not saying that my tone of voice hadn't run somebody out of the rooms. But I know today that if I run them out of there, and I'm not doing it on purpose, they didn't want to be there anyway. I look around these rooms and there's quite a few people here I know. I'm real glad that the people that I know, if they saw the program, came here maybe just to hear me share. And I appreciate that. But I hope you came here to listen to the message. Because I know that when I got clean, I heard somebody speak that had 8 years clean. And a year later, he was out there using again. Hard. We come here to share a message about change, nature, the things within inside of us that make us who we are, and relationships with other people. That's the message. It's not who I am, what I look like, where I'm from. It's the message that I'm trying to carry here. Relationships with the intimate person of your choosing is probably one of the funniest ones I've been a part of, because I can laugh at most of them today. I couldn't laugh at them when I was right in the middle of them, but I laugh at them today. I made a choice when I got here to not be in a relationship with a woman because I had a wife that was getting ready to divorce me. And I was angry. They told me no relationship for the first year. I said, "Not a problem. I ain't got a problem. I don't have nothing to do with women." A couple of years later, it changed a little bit. I got a little bit like I wanted to be around one or something. And it took almost 3.5 years before I actually got into a relationship with someone by accident. Because I got my eyes out for you, whoever you are. And what I know is I never could, if I caught up with them, they were headed some other way or with another man or with another woman or wherever they were going. And I just couldn't connect. There wasn't a connection there. And the first relationship I got in was a long-distance relationship, just like my first sponsor was a long-distance sponsor. I felt like that probably would be safer for me. I don't know what Safer was, but she, shortly after we got in a relationship, said, adios.
And I'm thinking, what'd I do?
Don't we do that? What do I do? What did I do?
I didn't do anything.
The second relationship, from the same state, the same long distance, wrote me an email. No, actually sent me a letter. I'll get to the email one later. And it was kind of like, I'm 4 years clean. I just spoke at her birthday. The next morning, she tells me, I can't be a part of your life. I've got too much going on in mine. Adios. I spent the next 7 years trying to avoid relationships, I mean intimate relationships with people, yet trying to understand and learn about intimate relationships with women without having sex with them. Didn't mean I didn't want to. Didn't mean that I didn't probably put on some kind of air that I really wanted to be a part of that. But I tried to understand relationships with women, with just our other people, and what they were looking for and what they wanted. And I'm sure that, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm sure that somewhere down the road I probably missed out on some pretty good relations with relationships. But I know today that that was a true gift from y'all giving me everything you gave me that taught me a little bit about changing who I was. Rather than looking for my part in it only, I started looking for what other people's part in it was. I started treating them differently. I started giving without expecting something in return. That was what I was actually doing. I didn't realize it. I didn't know it. I was just doing that. And then, 7 years later, I'm talking to this woman on the phone, and we hang up, and the next thing I know, I got this email about hot relationship. And I was in the right place at the right time, and we took off. 2 or 3 months, it was great. Next thing I know, I get this card in the mail. At first, she told me, she said, you know, I don't think you're trying this as much as I am. You're not putting as much into it as I am. So, you need to make a decision. Thought about it. She was right. Wrote it all down. Pluses, minuses, and stuff like that. She was right. So I started calling her, trying to go where she lived, because it was long distance also. And the next thing I know, I get a card in the mail with a change of name, last name, because she went and got married to a newcomer that came in the rooms with 10 years clean. She'd done this. 8 years clean, she'd done this. And I went, wow. What did I do? And I got into one more, and it was real short. She emailed me that it was over. When she did, I started to say, now, you know, I need an answer here. You know, when I talked to that woman that sent me that card with her last name changed, when I asked her, because I still take her as a friend, I still believe she has a big part of my life, I said, what was it about me? And she scared me. She said, it wasn't about you, it was about me. Now, I'm not thinking it's about her. I'm thinking it's about me and what I did. Real self-centered, right here. And she told me it wasn't about you, it was about me, and I didn't deserve you. I didn't know what to do with that information. I did not know where to go with that information. What I did know was that my sponsors, all three of them, had told me that keep giving it a shot. Keep doing it. The right person is out there for you. Now, I'll end with this. I'm on my honeymoon this weekend. I got married in April, but we planned this thing way before to be here for our honeymoon. And we had to make some, we had to jostle some things to get out of town and be able to get back, and they made us stay come 2 days early and stay a day late here. So, feel sorry for us, okay? My relationships today, the people that are in here that know me, that have read on a card that I'm speaking, that are here, some of them are here just because my name was on there and they wanted to come support me. Or they came because they have heard me share before and they like what they hear and they want to come back and hear more. I don't have the answers. I ain't got none of them. What I know is I do what you ask me to do. I come to meetings on a regular basis. I am sponsored by somebody in Narcotics Anonymous. I sponsor people in Narcotics Anonymous only. I work the steps with a sponsor. Anything else we're supposed to do? Whatever it is, I'm doing it, okay? And believe me, having a woman in my life today that is probably just as serious about recovery as she is about our relationship is real important in my life. It's real important. Because I want her to experience the same wonderful things from you people that I've experienced. And that's the love that's given out when we show up as a group of people anywhere. It could be in a parking lot because somebody locked the door and didn't open it for a meeting and we have a meeting anyway. Because we don't need the niceties of the coffee that's made. It's nice to have it, but we don't need those things. We need to have a meeting. We need to be a part of something like that. We need those things. We have this need. And those relationships that we talk about are relationships with other people. And today, I evidently exude, and that's a word I don't know the definition of, I evidently exude something different than when I first got here. Because people look at me and they smile. People look at me and they come to me to give me a hug. I went to a convention one time and I said, well, nobody's hugging me. And somebody asked me, what were you doing? I said, well, I'm standing around waiting for somebody to hug me. There's my relationships when I first got clean. And they told me that maybe you need to go out and hug one of them first. And all of a sudden, the complexion of the relationships in that convention changed. Because everybody wanted to hug everybody then. Because I was a part of giving before receiving something I was expecting rather than not. Thank y'all for letting me share.
Okay, now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Aljera from California.
I'm an addict. My name is Aljera. I'm going to Hawaii. And I'm really grateful to be here. And I just want to take a second to acknowledge the people on the Gulf Coast who can't go to a meeting tonight. And tell you that they need money. I'm just saying it real. They need money. If you have money, send them some. The Red Cross is taking donations. So, I am self-employed, and what I do for a living is kind of chaotic, and so I was in my office one day, and it was crazy, and the phone rang, and it was somebody from the World Service office telling me that they wanted me to do this workshop on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and I said, sure, thank you, thank the committee, I got to go. And so then I got here, and I went to the program. They make you sign, like, a waiver saying that you won't curse, and I don't know that I'll be able to do that, but they make you sign things saying you won't curse, and, you know, if they want to know, like, somebody to contact in case of an emergency and all that stuff. And so when I got there, I couldn't find myself on the program, and so I thought maybe they changed their mind. That would have been fine, too. And then I thought, you know, how fortunate you came here early. Because I was going to check in tomorrow morning, in which case I wouldn't be here now. So, anyway, you know, I flew out yesterday and I thought about this workshop. I think a lot. I get paid to think, actually. And I do. I make, they pay me a lot of money to think. I'm a problem solver by trade. So I was thinking about this topic, and I'm like Dickie. If you think I'm going to tell you about intimate relationships, this ain't the room. And why is that? because I think it's, like, too obvious, quite frankly. I will say a couple of things about the change in my relationship since I've been clean as a result of incorporating, internalizing, practicing the principles and steps. I have a couple of things to say. The first thing is I no longer need you to behave a certain way for me to be okay. You can do whatever you want. I don't care, really, unless it, you know, physically impacts me. I don't need it. I don't need that. And the other thing is that my sponsor says to me, you can be right or you can be happy. So, you know, every day I can make a choice. I can be right or I can be happy. I prefer to be happy today. It's not really that important to be right. What I wanted to talk about really is my relationship, the changing nature of my relationship in the following areas. Money, food, debting and spending, right, credit card stuff. We all have that issue around here. Gambling, looking for something for nothing. And my relationship with my disease and my relationship with my higher power. You know, when I first, I made a list, because I don't want to forget any of that stuff. When I first got clean, I was your classic addict. I put down the pipe and picked up the spoon, and I gained 80 pounds the first year I was clean. And I didn't understand the relationship between the disease of addiction and eating pints of Haagen-Dazs every night. I didn't know that one of the things we do before, because this is earlier, this is like three steps. I didn't know that one of the things that we do as addicts is we kind of like change the way we manifest the disease. Because the disease is the disease is the disease is the disease, right? And so whether or not I'm using drugs, the disease is still active. And I have invented very creative ways to check out and not take anything. So I used to eat Haagen-Dazs every night, and I didn't understand that that was the disease of addiction. It was taking something outside of me, into me, to change my chemical makeup in my brain to make me see the world differently. Because I believe the disease of addiction is a disease of perception. It's a perception disorder. The problem that I have is I have a fucked up relationship with reality. And I want the world to be the way I want it to be. And I will try to jam that square peg into the round hole and make it fit, destroy the peg and the board, make it happen to make the world the way I want it to be. That's the disease I have, and I still have it, and I've been clean for 21 years. So I used to eat this Haagen-Dazs every night, and I gained 80 pounds, and my sponsor explained to me that the first step tells me that we are powerless over our addiction, not and, comma, that our lives had become unmanageable. So that when I chose to, because I would get up out of bed in the middle of the night and go to 7-Eleven and buy Haagen-Dazs ice cream. When I made the decision to do that, that I wasn't some victim of circumstance, that I had made a decision to act. And the first thing I learned in Narcotics Anonymous is that I am responsible for what I do. It's no more blaming people for my behavior. Oh, my disease. Oops, my disease made me do it. So what I learned, and by the way, I have to tell you, I was engaged in that struggle for 20 years. I surrendered ice cream on my 20th birthday, March 6, 2004, and not a drop has passed my mouth since that day. Why? Because to me, ice cream is fucking heroin. I can't eat it. Now, people that if you knew, I'm sorry, just put in whatever, you know, drug you use or something, but, and people look at me like I'm speaking Chinese, but whatever it is that I do that makes my life unmanageable as a result of this disease is my problem today. If my problem is I'm so focused on a pint of Haagen-Dazs that I can't be here with you, that's a problem. And so it took me 20 years of experimenting to figure out, Aldrin, you can't have any. You can't have a bite because it's the first one that gets me. The basic text says that. It's the first hit. This is not the first hit. You should say that. When I got clean, it said you couldn't take the first hit, pill, or drink. But they changed that because we realized that we don't have a substance disorder. We have a disease. It doesn't matter if you take a hit, pill, drink, shove it up your ass, put it in your nose, swallow it. It's all the same disease. So after being engaged in a struggle with this thing for 20 years, I finally surrendered. Surrender is sweet. It's no longer an issue today. I just don't do it. I'm not suggesting it's easy. The other night, I was out at the mall, one of my favorite places. To me, the mall is like Nirvana. I was out at the mall trying to find a purse, and I noticed they just opened a Dairy Queen. So my brain says to me, well, you know, you haven't had any ice cream now in over a year, and Dairy Queen's really not Haagen-Dazs, and you're just going to have one. I've been clean long enough to, A, recognize my disease. That was the disease talking. And to, B, know that I am powerless over that. And what does that mean? It means that I can't make it go away. And so I've got to ask a loving God in that moment to help me and keep walking. I don't go to the ice cream store. I don't go to the ice cream aisle. So that's the story with ice cream. 20 years, folks, recovery is a slow process. So I got clean in 1984, and when I got clean, I came in from under the freeway, literally. And I didn't have credit because I didn't pay bills, because I didn't think I needed to pay bills because I was very who I am, and I didn't pay bills. So consequently, I didn't even know what a FICO score was, but I didn't have one. I was like in the 99th percentile, I was in the first percentile, which meant that 99% of the people in the country had better credit than me. So, gee, what a surprise. It took me 7 years in Narcotics Anonymous to rebuild my credit. And it took me 4 years to destroy it. Because I was confused. I thought that what you could buy made you who you were. And see, you know, I came from a really poor family, and I told myself that I deserved these things. I deserve this. I've had a rough day today. I deserve this because everybody else has one, and why can't I have one too? Now, don't forget I can't pay for any of it. I have credit cards. It's okay. I'll buy it today, and I'll pay for it tomorrow. Can I have a hamburger today, Popeye? I will gladly pay you on Tuesday for a hamburger today. So, when I had about $12,000 in credit card debt, my head popped out of my ass, and I realized that there might be a problem here. And then I went to the World Convention in Paris, and then my head went back in my ass. And I thought I was somebody else, and then I had $28,000 of credit card debt. And then I declared bankruptcy. To me, that was surrendering. You know what I mean? It's like, I can't do this. I can't pay this. I don't have this. And I don't use credit cards today. I am a cash and carry girl. My father once said to me, and I thought my father, you know, I thought my parents, they're both dead now, God bless them, were from the South, and they were very poor. And my father believed that when you go buy something, you give them the money, they give you the thing, and then it's yours. It's very clean. And I told him, oh, no, you don't understand. That's the old-fashioned way. This is America. We have credit now. So, when I go buy something, I give them the money, they give me the thing, and then it's mine. The only thing I make payments for is my house, because I didn't have that much money to give them. I mean, the point I'm trying to make is, And how this all ties into relationships and diseases, the ways that we lie to ourselves to continue to engage in self-destructive behavior. When I'm spending money that I can't afford to spend, who does it hurt? It hurts me. And when I lie to myself about it and then believe the lies, because that is what we do, I sell myself wolf tickets to get pissed off if you don't believe them. Hello! So I stopped using credit cards. I stopped debting and spending. Declaring bankruptcy to me was humiliating. It was a horrible experience. The worst part was detoxing from not being able to go to the mall every time I felt like it. Seriously, because all of a sudden the candy was gone. You know, I didn't have the dope anymore. So my relationship with money has changed a lot. Money, I believe, is another source of energy. It gives me choices. That's all it is. Doesn't make me important. Doesn't make me better than you. Doesn't make me worse than you. I mean, certainly it allowed me to come here, right? This is a cash trip, by the way. Bank card. When they put the Visa symbol on those ATM cards, that was the best thing that ever happened to addicts, as far as I'm concerned. Because there's no, I mean, unless, of course, you want to debt and spend, you can do that. But for me, it allows me to make hotel reservations, rent cars, shop online with money that I already have, as opposed to money that you're going to charge me 18% interest to spend. So my relationship with money has changed, and from that change is an incredible amount of freedom. I don't worry about money anymore. It's really simple. I mean, living in reality, which I think is a challenge for all of us, is such an easy way to live. I can want whatever I want. I can't have everything I want. And here's something else. A lot of what I want is not good for me. Because I have a twisted wanter, you know? What I want is not good for me. It's just not. So that's the money thing. I was at the World Convention in San Diego, I guess it was 2 years ago, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I couldn't sleep. I was crying all the time. I was depressed. I couldn't think. It felt like I had cotton in my brain. And I came back from the convention. I had an appointment to see the doctor. So I go to the doctor's office, and the doctor starts feeling around my throat, right, and says to me, "What's that lump?" I go, "I don't know. You're the doctor. You tell me." So my doctor was a resident, so she's not really a doctor yet. She's on her way to being a doctor. So she called her supervising physician in. He starts feeling around my throat, and they start whispering. What do I think? I think I have cancer. So they call the intern in, because they want the intern to feel a lump in my throat. I'm like, wait a second. I'm here. I'm not some thing that you get to, like, you know, do medical training on. What the fuck's going on? They said, "Well, you have a lump in your throat." I said, "I figured that part out. I already asked about the lump. What's the problem?" "We don't know." What's worse for an addict? Not knowing. "What do you mean you don't know? You're the doctor." So off I go to nuclear medicine. Nuclear medicine, they give you radioactive medication. The doctor comes out in full radioactive protective garb and hands me a vial with a little pill that he won't touch. And I say, "You want me to take this into my body?" Now, what you don't know about me is this. I'm this organic hippie girl. You'd never know if you look at me, but I am. Everything I eat is organic. I don't eat a whole lot of junk. I use French skincare products. I have an organic garden in my backyard. I don't want to take radioactive medication. The whole idea makes me want to throw up, as a matter of fact. So they said to me, "Well, look, we have to do a thyroid scan." Now, my sponsor had thyroid cancer, so I'm like, "Well, I must have, because what, you know? The worst thing for an addict is not knowing, because then we can, like, fertilize in our mind what the problem is." So I take this radioactive thing, and then I come back the next day for my scan. So I have this nurse who's just a fucking champ. And she says to me, "The doctor will come out to describe your treatment options." Not "the doctor will come out and tell you what the problem is," is what they're supposed to say. So I know now I have cancer. So the doctor says to me, "Sucky, you have Graves' disease." I'm like, okay. And then he hands me this thing to sign. It's a waiver. The waiver is that, as far as they know, the treatment of Graves' disease has not caused cancer yet, but if they cause this cancer in me, they're not responsible. I'm like, oh, wait a second. What you don't know about me is I'm really smart, and I'm not just going to take some pill because you told me to take it. I don't care who you are. I'm going to do some research. So I got diagnosed with Graves' disease. Graves' disease is a weird thing. It's actually an autoimmune disease that attacks your body attacks your thyroid. So now my body's attacking itself. And it was just fabulous. I didn't sleep from June to October. So I know because I had the experience, lack of sleep will not kill you. Because I wouldn't take anything. My sponsor eventually said to me, you can take a sleeping pill on Saturday night. So then I did that, but what happened was I was so freaked out by taking the fucking pill, I didn't sleep anyway. So I didn't sleep, and I was like completely not here, and it was horrible. And so my relationship with my body has changed. I take really good care of myself now. It's no more bullshit. You know what I mean? No more I meant to take a walk, but I didn't take one today. I take good care of myself. What does that mean? It means I eat good food. I get enough rest. I take a nap sometimes. I don't drink 3 pots of coffee a day. Why? Because I don't want to feel like I'm on speed. I drink maybe a cup of coffee a day. I'm really into environmental control. What do I mean by that? I don't hang out with drama queens. I tell people all the time, when they want to tell me stuff, I say, do I need to know this? Because if I don't need to know it, I really don't want to know it. I have enough stuff in my own life to deal with without listening to this scuttlebutt about all of you. Because you know what? The other thing I know is that my friend Daryl says, everybody gets a turn around here. So maybe it's not my turn yet. For me to revel in the fact that it's your turn, I don't like that. So my relationship with my body and with gossiping also has changed. I don't gossip. I'm not interested. As a result of being diagnosed with Graves' disease, my relationship with God has really changed. Because when you can't sleep in the middle of the night, there's not a whole lot happening besides God. I mean, you only watch one so many infomercials. And so my sponsor said to me, when I can't sleep, she says, I recite the readings in my head. You know, we'll start that with, who's an addict? What's the Narcotics Anonymous program? Why are we here? And I would do that. And then I thought, wow, maybe I should meditate. So I just lay in bed, and I would, like, try to quiet myself enough so that I could hear the voice of my loving God. And so what that has done for me is I have a prayer and meditation practice, and in 99% of the cases, I know the right thing to do. I'm not saying I do it. I'm just saying I know what it is. That's light years from where it was when I first got clean. And I've also learned that little voice that says, you know, don't do that, Aldera, or why don't you turn left? That's the voice of God. And I try to listen to that voice today. Yesterday I missed my plane to come here. I thought this is a fabulous way to start a vacation. So here's what happened. I live in Oakland, California. The Bay Area, which is where I live, the traffic there makes you want to commit homicides. It's like unbelievable. And I have a friend that commutes to San Francisco every day from Berkeley, which is near Oakland. So I said to her, my flight's at 9, should I leave at 6:30? She says to me, oh no, just leave at 7, we'll be fine. Wrong. So I didn't listen to myself, I listened to her. Because I thought that she had superior knowledge. So I leave my house at 7, and I get on the freeway. Not only is the actual, like, approach to the bridge completely backed up, The approach to the bridge is completely backed up. And I'm like, this is going to be a problem. So I get to the airport at 8:35, flight's at 9. And so I say to the woman, you know what, it's okay. Send my bags later, just put me on the plane. She says to me, Miss Tucker, your seat has been given away. Well, here's how come. That's what I said. I said, 8:35, I've got 25 minutes to get to the plane, what's the problem? Remember 9/11? Well, now they have all these rules about flying. You've got to be there 45 minutes before your flight. That's when they stop taking bags for that flight. They will not allow you and your bags not fly together, because if you do have a bomb, they at least want it to kill you too, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a terrorist. Anyway, so they wouldn't let me on the flight. So I didn't have a fit, which I have been known to do, because, hey, guess what? I fucked up. So I said, okay, let me ask you this. When's the next flight? At noon, I can put you on the waiting list. I said, okay, why don't we do that? When's the flight after that? 5. For the seats in that flight, yes. Can I have one of those seats? Yes, you can. It will cost you $100. Fine. Here's $100. Confirm me a seat. So now I'm in the airport. See, but I come from the school of thought that everything happens for a reason. So I'm in the airport, and I see this man I haven't seen in 25 years. He looks exactly the same, but older. And he said to me, I look exactly the same, and I was really happy to hear that. So, and that's why I missed my flight, so I could see Cameron. Cameron actually is an entertainment attorney, and Cameron was on his way here because one of the bands he manages is playing at the coffee house. See how God works? Isn't that interesting? So that's why I missed my plane. So I get to the little thing at, you know, whenever they call my name from the waiting list. Now, there are people that are on the plane that like where they're sitting. I'm like, you know what? I'll sit on the wing. Just get me a seat. So they call me up there, and I'm telling the guy my little tale of woe. He goes, you know, is not letting it back up. I had enough miles to upgrade to first class. And I wanted to use them because I think United is going to go bankrupt and then they're going to be worth nothing. So I tell the little man behind the counter my tale of woe. He goes to me, oh, Miss Tucker, we have one first class seat left. Would you like it? And I said, yes, I would. Thank you very much. So I got on the plane and I got here and here I am. Now, there was a time when I would have blamed, I don't know who, maybe Lori for missing my flight. She's the first one to leave at 7 o'clock. I would have made such a scene at the airport, they wouldn't have put me on a plane. I would have been fucking wild. Because I still understand why 8:35 is not early enough for a 9 o'clock flight. I don't care about the terrorists. I don't get it. But I didn't do that, you know, because this is what I know about Narcotics Anonymous. If we come in here and really, like, apply ourselves to this way of life, this program works. It completely transformed lives. I am so changed. When I think back to the crazy, I mean, I was crazy. I just went and sat down. I mean, it's like, hey, you ain't getting on the flight. No amount of jumping up and down, screaming, yelling, cursing, using $5,000 words, offering them money is getting you on the plane. You're not getting on the plane. And I believe as a result of coming in here and following direction, because if you think this is just about not using drugs, you've missed the whole show, folks. So as a result of coming in here and doing all that stuff and getting a sponsor and following direction and making mistakes and looking stupid and saying I'm sorry and being right and being wrong, all of my relationships have changed. Every single one in every area of my life. My grand sponsor, who, by the way, is 80 years old and 30 years clean, September 5th, says, the disease manifests itself in every area of your life, and so does the recovery, but you gotta work for it. Fight for your fucking recovery. Don't give in to the disease. This disease will kill us. Now, I don't know if it wants to kill me. I'm not one of those people that I'd be dead. I'd probably live, and that'd be worse. But what I do know is that this disease is powerful, but the steps are more powerful. These steps change lives. They make it possible to have a relationship. They make it possible. I've had the same sponsor now for 16 years. You know what? She's told me some shit I didn't want to hear. She's told me stuff I didn't like. She talks to me. I would never let... I just say, no, who do you think you're talking to? Roberta can say anything to me. I just listen to her. Why? Because when I asked her to sponsor me, I gave her that right. And I know that she loves me. And so I come from the school of, you don't just change your sponsor like you're changing dirty socks. Because it is a primary relationship. It is from that relationship that all relationships flow. Because when I came in here, I didn't know how to have a relationship. My theory was, if you pissed me off, it was like, adios, see you later, you no longer exist. That's how I was raised in my house. We wrote people off all the time, as a family. We wrote off other family members. You know what I mean? My grandmother died, and all of a sudden, my mother, sister, Murdy's, and her family didn't exist anymore for 4 years. That's how I was raised. So I didn't know about the silent treatment, and about cutting you up with evil looks and words. I was trained at the knee of a master. I don't want to be that person today. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be the person who's always right and always self-righteous and always alone. I don't want to be that person. There's no payoff in that. I believe that addicts are creatures of instant gratification. We are. So I choose today, on a good day, because believe me, I have bad days. I'm not like any spiritual giant by any stretch. But I try to at least choose behaviors when the payoff is going to be a good one. So I try not to engage in self-destructive behavior too much. I do. Why? Because I still like the thrill of living on the edge. I'm an addict. I like it out there on the outer limits. Like, how far can I push this envelope before it falls over the side? That's where I want to be. That's where I want to be when I was loaded. That's where I want to be clean. But the price for living out there is too high. And I'm not willing to pay that price today. Behaviorship has consequences. Behaviorship comes with behavior comes with tabs. The question always in the moment is, am I willing to pick up the tab? And the problem is, because we have a disease that clouds our thinking, the answer will always be yes. That's why I can't act on my first impulse anymore. You know, it's always better to go do something else and come back to it. And I learned how to do that in Narcotics Anonymous. The first step gave me a stop. If I admit that I'm powerless, it means I cannot. Because people who have no power don't engage in behaviors. It took me a lot of years to understand that simple concept. It took me more years to practice it. I said earlier, recovery is a slow process. Why are you going anywhere? Because life is too sweet. I'm almost done because it's almost time. I just want to tell you a little bit about me so you know, because I'm a fucking miracle and I know it. I came in from under the freeway, folks. Under the freeway. I slept under the freeway and lived like an animal. All I wanted to do was smoke free day. I would smoke you if I could. It didn't matter. And when I got here, I was told that I could do anything and be anything. And you know what? I bought that ticket. And I went back to school. I'm a fucking lawyer today. I came to Narcotics Anonymous with a high school education. And I tell you that not because I think I'm great, but to tell you that you can do it too. Whatever that dream is, you can do it. And the people saying you can't do it, they're not your friends. So, I have a very successful private practice. Very, very, very successful. Why? Because my God wants me to have everything as long as I'm willing to work for it. The free lunch is over. I believe that if we're willing to work hard, we can have things. You don't have to want to be a lawyer. Maybe you want to open a daycare center, whatever it is. Whatever it is that you want to do, I'm telling you that you can do it. Because that's my experience. I came in from under the freeway with nothing. When I came in Narcotics Anonymous, I had two pairs of panties. One of my favorite pastimes, and I'm proud of it, is shopping. I like to shop. I like to buy things. I just do. And as long as I don't hurt myself doing it, I guess I could have worse vices. So, to wrap this all up, we change, our relationships change, the way we treat ourselves and others change, the way we treat our children, our mates, the people out in the world change. As a result of that, the way we treat us change, the way they treat us changes. All of that builds self-esteem. And I believe if we feel good about ourselves, we can really do anything. I'm an addict. My name is Elder, and thank you for letting me share.
Hi, I'm an addict. My name is Bill. Hi, everybody. Again, I'd like to thank Dickie D and Algera for speaking for us tonight. Sarah, come on up. I've asked Sarah to read We Do Recover.
Thank you, Algera. My name is Sarah, and I am a recovering addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, non-religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
If we could all circle up.